Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Will you dance with me?
Only if Romy can dance with us.
And I don't know what your favorite scene is. Like, seemed like the obvious is the dance scene?
I think that was the most fun scene. I had some moves that they could incorporate, but I tried not to make it look like she was too polished or good of a dancer. Lisa is not as trained a dancer, so she talks about how she would just sort of support. And there's Mira doing that.
Hi, I'm Dan Patrick, and this is IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick, an Amazon original. The podcast where I talk to some of Hollywood's top actors, directors, and producers about some of their most iconic scenes that have defined their careers, helped shape the cinematic landscape, and have even become fixtures in pop culture. Today, we're joined by award-winning actress Mira Sorvino. She gained global recognition when she won an Oscar for her role in the film The Mighty Aphrodite. In 1997, she starred in the comedy Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion alongside Lisa Kudrow. Romy and Michelle was directed by David Merkin and written by Robin Schiff. While not initially a box office hit, the film has garnered a cult-like status, inspiring theme parties and anniversary viewings. On today's episode, we're discussing the dance scene at the climax of Romy and Michelle's high school reunion. Hi, Mira.
Hi.
When you read the script, what did you say when you came home or you talked to your agent?
I laughed out loud as I was reading it, and almost no scripts to make me do that.
But what was it? Was there a moment, a line, or just the whole concept?
I think it was the relationship between the two characters, their ridiculousness, how they think they're smart, but they're not. But there's also this good spirit of the high school underdog who stands up to the meanies, and that I could very much relate to, and I feel like a lot of people can relate to that.
But also with comedy, you know, you'd come off winning an Oscar, and I don't know if sometimes you go in a different direction purposely, or, you know, was it subconscious that you went a different direction?
The thing is, I went from winning an Oscar for a comedy, a dumb blonde comedy, but maybe a sort of higher echelon comedy because of the pedigree of the director, etc. But I just looked at it as great material, even if it was slightly lower brow. But honestly, this became the most popular of all of my projects.
And plus, you had a director who directed a Simpsons episode, you know, David Merkin. You know, he had a track record going into that movie.
And he's a very funny person himself. When you talk to him, he's quite hysterical. And then, of course, Lisa. Gosh, Lisa Kudrow is just a genius. She's really a true comedic genius, and she's also an incredibly smart person outside of comedy. She was going to be a doctor like the rest of her family, and then she ended up just couldn't escape the acting bug and became one of the most beloved actresses, I think, in America today. I mean, people have an enduring love for her because of Phoebe from Friends, because of Romy and Michelle, because of The Comeback, so many different things. And then she's as delightful and wonderful and warm and wise as she is funny. She's a great person, and we are friends to this day. So that was an added bonus of developing a long-term friendship with Lisa Kudrow. The two characters came originally from a play called The Ladies' Room, and they were sort of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern sort of side characters, but everybody loved them. And Lisa had been Michelle in the play, so she was really part of it from the inception. So there's kind of a long history to it, and I'm really proud of it because it means so much to people's lives. Like, I get messages literally every day from people online, whether it's, you know, one of the social media platforms or whatever, where they just say how much it has meant to them in their lives. And people do the dance at their weddings. They literally reenact the dance at their weddings. And, you know, I think it gives people hope who are, you know, sort of feeling outcast or not equal to. And these sort of dumb, ridiculous heroines give them hope that you could just be yourself and be zany and crazy and stick up for your own insides, and then things will be okay. I think that's a great message.
But also, you didn't find too many buddy movies where you had two women who were the buddies, too. It was kind of rare.
Very rare. I mean, there's Lucille Ball with Ethel. That was a sort of an ensemble. There's Thelma and Louise. I'm racking my brain to think of a buddy movie before Us that was just a two-person, like Bob Hope, Bing Crosby kind of series, or, you know, they're just the tradition of buddy movies, Laurel and Hardy. I don't know that there was ever two women before, and there haven't been too many since. So I felt like we were sort of groundbreaking, but that there still could be a lot more of that out there.
But also that magic of having that person who is your buddy in the movie, you really depend on each other to make it work.
I came in and I was offered the role and I met Lisa and just thought she was so wonderful. I mean, everyone in Friends is amazing, but Lisa created a character that was such a confection, such a not a real person yet that still functions. You know, the character of Phoebe is so bizarre and yet so lovable and by turns smart and daft. And that is a real work of art.
I mean, to give someone like Heather Mooney the chance to express herself through fashion, it could have really changed her life.
Yeah. For me, though, it's like I've given birth to my own baby girl, you know, only she's like a big giant girl who smokes and says a lot. Let's fold scarves.
Okay.
And so seeing that, you're like, oh, of course, this woman will be fantastic in this role. And yet Michelle is very different from Phoebe. Michelle is not the same at all. And just as Romy, I hope, is not the same as Linda Ashe for Mighty Aphrodite or anything else I've done. So.
When did Alan Cummings come into the picture?
I'm not sure when he was cast, but boy, is he wonderful too.
Oh, man. You see theater stuff with him and you understand the magic of him. And I don't know what your favorite scene is. Like, seemed like the obvious is the dance scene?
I think that was the most fun scene for sure. I mean, we took a couple of days to film it. We rehearsed it for 2 weeks. I had taken ballet for a while as a teenager, as a child and a teenager. And so I had some moves that they could incorporate, but I tried not to make it look like she was too polished or good of a dancer, just that she could do tricks, you know? So like, I wanted her to look more like a gymnast dismounting rather than, you know, an elegant ballerina. That was fun because I got to use a little, you know, a tour jeté here, some pique turns there, and yet in the service of comedy. So that was super fun. And then that ridiculous kind of final pose we do, like almost like an Indian statue, you know, of, you know, three gods together. Honestly, there's nothing more joyful than dancing to me. Like even Summer of Sam that I did with John Leguizamo, like our hustle scenes, even though that's a very serious and sometimes very dark film, that's just the most fun I can have professionally is dancing for sure.
And how much did you have to work with a choreographer on that? And how much was you and how much was the choreographer?
We worked for about 2 to 3 weeks. I think I just showed them what I already knew how to do. And then they kind of put it in place of where it should be. And Lisa is not as trained a dancer. So she talks about how she would just sort of support. And there's Mira doing that. but I don't think she gives herself enough credit because actually I think she's pretty good in the dance scene too. So,
you know, time after time, when did you realize that that was going to be the song?
Gosh, you know, when we recorded that scene in the prom thing, we just had to slow dance holding each other to no track because it hadn't been picked yet. So you just had clicks and it was quiet and we just held each other and cried.
And it was an expensive song at the time that they're spending over $200,000, I believe, to use that. Was there a backup song if you didn't get to use that song?
I don't know. I mean, they have an amazing soundtrack. The Romy and Michelle soundtrack is like sort of the soundtrack of the 80s. You know, it's got the Footloose song and I think Turning Japanese and when we're driving the car and we make the face at the little boy. There's a lot of Dance Hall Days. Like there's a ton of songs that are just from that era. And of course, that was my high school era. So it's nostalgic for me even to hear that music.
I guess the obvious question would be how much of this character is you? Any parallels?
Yeah. I mean, I was a nerd in high school. I was definitely a geek. People called me Mira Queera.
Wow.
Yeah, that was not nice. And I don't think it had anything to do with sexual orientation. They were just making fun of me as being odd. That started like when I was like 10. And, you know, people would always say, oh, Mira, Mira on the wall. Who's the ugliest on the wall? Mira. You know, it's great to have an unusual name as an adult. Not so much when you're a kid. Yeah, I think I have that same fighting spirit. When she stands up to the mean people, that came from my heart. And I really love that that scene is there.
You get some kind of sick pleasure from torturing other people? I mean, yeah, okay. So Michelle and I did make up some lame story. We only did it because we wanted you to treat us like human beings. But you know what I finally realized? I don't care if you like us, because we don't like you. You're a bad person with an ugly heart, and we don't give a flying what you think.
Otherwise, we're still in our little bubble of like, okay, well, our friendship solves everything. But like, you have to have courage in life. Life is hard. You know, the longer I live, the more I'm like, oh, life is much harder than I even thought it was last year. Like, this year has been such a hard year for everyone. And for a variety of reasons, you know, you have to have strength and backbone. You know, you have to have courage to face, you know, what seem to be insurmountable odds. And for a high school kid, those are the mean girls. And even though these girls are now, you know, 10 years past high school, they're still living in that high school mentality, right? They're still kind of 14-year-olds trapped in like 28-year-olds' bodies or whatever. So.
The arrowhead symbol, like that's on your dress.
Star Trek.
Yeah. Okay.
That's Star Trek.
Okay.
I was an old original Star Trek fan. Like when I was a kid in the 70s, my dad and I would watch reruns because it was canceled by then. You know, I think it was canceled the year I was born. My father was a diehard Trekkie and I became a diehard Trekkie. And I thought that fit in perfectly with who Romy sees herself as. She sees herself as Captain Kirk. Like if there was an energy that she could suck in and emulate, it would be James Tiberius Kirk. So I asked Mona May, the costume designer, if it could have the emblem, and she put it on the dress.
I love that. Did you go back for a high school reunion?
I did not, because I was still afraid of the mean people at my school. Isn't that crazy?
No kidding.
Yes. Yeah. I've been to my college reunion several times, and I love it, although it is a little frightening because you go back and you remember being 18, walking in the yard for the first time. I'm not going to say how old we are, but we're certainly nowhere near that moment in life. And you feel the same. You're like, oh no, but I still remember those feelings so fully, that perspective that the entire world was our oyster. You know, it was all ahead of us. And now we're halfway through it at least. And, you know, the first Harvard reunion, they had a church service and 30 some odd people had already died out of not that large of a class.
Yeah.
And I was stunned, you know? So it really is this kind of referendum on life and its brevity and how you have to make hay while the sun shines, carpe diem, and all the rest.
Well, I remember going back to my first, and I didn't go back to my high school reunion again, but everybody thinks that you've changed. Like, they just sort of stare at you if you have some kind of success. And it was just weird because I realized they hadn't changed. I hadn't really changed, but in their minds, I had. So you kind of walk in, and I just felt so out of place. You know, it was like it couldn't end quick enough for me.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be fine if I actually went. You know, I've had some communications over the years from people that used to terrify me, and they were all very nice, and they were so vicious to me. They literally made my life a living hell, and it makes you kind of laugh out loud because you realize how little all of it means one way or the other. And, you know, I had this thing that really affected my self-image almost permanently, like when I was 16, and I've told this story before, but I was sitting in the courtyard during a study break. I think I was a junior. Our school had three stories, and I was just on a bench outside reading. A window opens and somebody from the third floor yells down, "Mira Sorvino is ugly." It just took my breath away, and I looked up, and it was this boy, and he wasn't a particularly attractive person himself, but he was in the popular group. He was friends with all the jocks and the really pretty girls that they all sort of dated, and it was a very insular little A group or clique or whatever you want to call it. And I yelled back, "Blank, blank, his name is a blank hole." You know, just all that flew out of my mouth. But I was crushed. And I carried that with me for a long time. And then as a young actress, I ended up doing a photo shoot for Us magazine before it was like a gossip magazine. I don't know if there's anything I could equate it to right now, but it was a glossy, beautiful, kind of artsy photos of actors and in-depth interviews. And they did a photo shoot of me. And I talked about how sometimes when I needed to be confident, I would put on a motorcycle jacket and a little like Marlon Brando cap from like the Wild Ones and red lipstick. And I would just try and feel on top of the world. Like it was almost like an actor's way of like kind of pumping themselves up for an audition or whatever. So I got this letter and I opened it in my tiny apartment because I lived in an apartment that was like, it was a railroad flat with three rooms that ran into each other, and the tub was in the kitchen, and the bathroom was outside of the apartment in the hall. You had to open it with a key. It was only used by me, but it was like a WC in the hall. It was terrifying. So in the middle of the night, you know, you had to leave your apartment to go to the bathroom. Very frightening. But, you know, this was me roughing it, you know, living the dream as a young actress. And I get this letter, and it says, "Hey, I just saw your feature in Us magazine. Way to go, you rebel bad girl, you. They certainly put you in the right section," because the section was called Looking Good. And then it was like, "Keep on keeping on, your friend, blankety blank."
Oh, no.
And I was like, this is the guy who said that I was ugly, that destroyed my confidence. And now he's saying that I'm in the right section, in the Looking Good section. And that, like, now he's like kissing up to me. And I almost like screamed. And then I started laughing, and I was like, well, gosh, I guess I can't believe the hype, you know, one way or the other, but how much power I gave him, you know, how much power I allowed that one stupid yell from a third floor window to affect my self-confidence. And I'd say it to even to this day, it made me insecure. And then to get that letter, and I really wish I'd framed the letter, because it was like, it was such a bizarre thing to learn that, like, you know, these opinions of people and who they will pay attention to and heat and all of the rest are so fickle, and none of it is substantive. And I shouldn't have ever let him get inside my head the way he did the first time, but nor should I, you know, accept flattery or people being kind of like wanting to be close to you because you're in the business or you're famous or whatever.
But do you tap into those feelings when you're shooting this movie?
Yeah, of course. I wasn't part of a group. I just had two best friends. And one of the best friends in particular really reminded me of Michelle. So Romy and Michelle were sort of like Mira and Elizabeth. And it was kind of us against the world, us against the mean kids, just having our own kind of zany, crazy fun. So it was very relatable.
I never knew that we weren't that great in high school. I mean, we always had so much fun together. I thought high school was a blast. And until you told me that our lives weren't good enough, I thought everything since high school was a blast. I think we should go back out there as ourselves and just have fun like we always do. The hell with everyone else.
I don't think I can.
Well, do you think you can stop being such a baby?
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
And then I based the voice of Romy on my sister's voice, because my sister used to have this way of talking with her best friend, Murph, like they were Valley Girls, even though we lived in the middle of New Jersey. And then I just made it lower. I just, okay, all right. So, okay. Yeah, all that. Okay, Michelle. Yeah, because I always saw her as a little masculine, like a little bit like the guy in the relationship. And I don't know if that makes any sense, but I tried to make her walk as though she were a football player in drag. Like really ungainly, just sort of, you know, like in her big high platform heels, but like, you know, just marching like a guy. And she had that kind of confidence, you know, I don't know where she gets it from. Like she comes with this natural confidence that I did not have, but that was part of the fun of her because she's just sort of outrageous. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know. It's almost like the analogy is probably not correct, but like Michael Scott in The Office has all this confidence, but he shouldn't have this confidence.
Right.
And that's what when I went back and watched the movie, you do have confidence, but I don't know how you got that confidence.
Right. And she also thinks she's really smart, but she's not. Yeah. So, but it's just this sort of assumption of like, you know, well, we're really smart and we're really cool. Our lifestyle is so cool, you know, and it's just like, okay. But that's sort of a saving grace in a way. Like people who have self-belief can get a lot done just on that belief. You know, like if you believe you can, you have a chance of it. If you say that you can't do it, then you most certainly won't be able to do it because you won't see it through. And actualize it. That self-belief and that kind of elan for life is really powerful.
How did this become a cult hit? Like, when did you realize it was something a little bit different?
Somebody came up behind me, tapped me on the shoulder. I turned around. It was a teenage girl. And she said, "I'm the Mary." And I was like, "Excuse me." She said, "I'm the Mary." I was like, "Oh my gosh, you're doing lines from Romeo and Michelle." And I was like, "Wow, that's like when I was a kid, we used to do them from like Animal House." And the fact that it had entered the cultural unconscious that way, I felt like it had arrived.
Everybody wants a sequel. And I'm not a sequel fan. There's nothing wrong with just the original and a standalone there. But you're involved in it, so it's different. Can you see where there is a sequel, or what would that sequel be?
I feel like there's a sequel to like what they're doing now, and that maybe life has separated them for a while and they're brought back together for some big zany thing that they're really on paper not suited for, but somehow make it work. I feel like there would be younger characters in it, because I think the original marketing of the film targeted towards people that were going to their 10-year reunion. The mentality of these characters is teenage. It's not, they are not grown-ups, even though they are living in a grown-up world. So this is going to be, and you have so many flashbacks to high school, this is really going to be relatable to also high school students. But they made it rated R because of Janine Garofalo's use of the F word. Because if you used it in a sexualized sense, there's an automatic R. And she, you know, hurls numerous insults at people where she suggests just what they can, you know, do. And that's an R right away. You can cut somebody's head off on camera, but if you say it, it's an R. And at that time, now everything has changed because of certainly COVID, but before that also, you know, just streaming and just the way films are today, all the money on films was made by repeat business. So, you know, you have a big box office opening weekend, but it has to be people going back to the theater again and bringing their friends. That's how the money increased. Mm-hmm. And if our core audience was like 16, 14 years old with an R rating, they couldn't go back with their friends. And what parent is going to go back to see Romeo and Michelle the next weekend? You know, it's like, so I feel like we really lost an economic chance by that rating. But the heart of the film is juvenile in a wonderful way, because we all have that person inside of us, that teenage self inside of us, right? I think that to bring that same audience back into it, you'd have to have a young character, like a kid or several kids that are in our care. Whether there are natural children is another question, because I don't know if they could quite accomplish that. I'm not sure that that's really in their wheelhouse of being actual mothers all this time. Or I feel like an inherited niece or something like that, or nephew, or perhaps a few kids. And so that there's this younger parallel element to it, the sort of the next generation of these sort of wacky, zany people would be part of the story. So I can see it, but I'm not sure everybody can see it. I know the fans want it. They literally ask me about it all the time.
Wait, isn't there a hashtag that's out there?
There are several hashtags out there. If you just type in hashtag Romy and Michelle, there's like on Instagram, I follow the hashtag Romy and Michelle, and I get multiple posts a day based on it, which is crazy because this is a film that debuted in 1997, right? Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, right? So it's cool.
Are there talks to do a sequel? Or you just get people who say, let's do a sequel, and they're fans?
We've explored the idea, and I think we'd all be willing to do it. It's all also in the hands of the original company that made the film that has not been willing to greenlight it. There was talk of a different manifestation of it, like not a movie, and that could be a possibility. I was told about it after it happened. I'm being very secretive because I don't want to reveal anything. I don't know if that is a reality. I would be so excited to resume that character just because she's really fun to play. I realized recently when I've done more comedies that it's my absolute favorite genre. Like I did Modern Family. You know, I played that ridiculous character, Nicole Rosemary Page. It was insane. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm just having the best time. And also, it certainly didn't hurt to work with such talented people. Like, the whole cast and crew of Modern Family is just top notch and wonderful. They're all so welcoming. And then when I did Hollywood for Ryan Murphy, my character is by turns comedic and dramatic. Like, there's like pathos and vulnerability and sadness, but there's also zany ridiculousness. And she's not a dumb blonde, but she acts like it sometimes. I am never happier than when I am in the comedy stratosphere. Like, that's, for me, it's like living life on a heightened happy plane. Just like dancing is to walking, like comedy is to acting. So I realized I have to do more of it. I just don't know what the next incarnation of that will be. And if it would be some kind of Romy and Michelle reboot or extension, that'd be fantastic. But it's not in my hands. I always put out very nicely, oh, I would love to do it if the mouse would agree. I maybe eventually, so many people talking about it for so many years, something will happen. I don't know.
Could you do a stage performance every night?
Sure. I mean, it depends on where and for how long, because I have kids.
Yeah.
I know that there is a Romy and Michelle the musical that has young people reprising our roles. So it's not a sequel. It's just doing the movie as a stage play.
I was also wondering, so you go to Harvard, and then what you were studying was not acting. Was it Eastern Asia studies or something like that? And then all of a sudden, do you just come home and say, I want to be an actor? And how did that go over in the house?
Well, I had acted in school plays since I was 8. And, you know, in high school, I was, you know, the lead of my senior year production and the female lead of the junior year production. And like, I was always in the plays. And when I was 16, a talent scout came to my high school looking for girls who could horseback ride and act, because they were doing a kind of a National Velvet reboot. They were doing a nationwide search for the leading girl. My school suggested me among 5 other girls. So apparently there were 5 of us who had horses and also acted. So I used to be a hunter jumper, and I loved competing in horse shows, and I was very fearless. I was kind of like a daredevil. I'm not fearless anymore, but I was physically. Like, I used to love to jump off of high things into water. Now anything over 10 feet, I'm like, my kids are like, come on, mom, do it. So I went in and I had like 5 callbacks and a screen test, and I didn't ultimately get it. They ultimately, after all of that, gave it to Melissa Gilbert, who was already very famous from Little House fame. But because of it, a lady that knew my parents, who managed children professionally, called them and asked, because she had heard about it, because she had clients in the mix also, and she said, could I represent Mira? And they said, well, she's 16 and a half. I guess we'll let her do it now. Because up until then, they had never let me do anything professional. I had been offered to be in a television show when I was 8 by Diane Ladd, and my parents wouldn't let me. So I almost started working a horror movie, which I turned down because it was really salacious and disgusting. And it had 2 nude shower scenes instead of 1. I was like, how many times can you rip off Psycho? But it was really gross. And the director couldn't believe when I turned it down. But it was so like wet t-shirty and exploitive and so kind of sadistic in its violence against the girls in it. And I was just like, I can't do this. It's gross. When I turned it down, and the guy was like, most young women would give their right arm for this kind of part. You know, he was from Eastern Europe or something. And I was like, I'm sorry, my religion forbids me to do it.
But I'm wondering, you have self-doubt in high school, and you go into a profession that just feeds off of that.
That's why Dad didn't want us to be actors. That's what he said. It's a business full of rejection, and it's a business of comebacks. You're never stable. You're only as good as your last 2 or 3 projects, however well they did. You know, it's a very unstable, rejecting profession, and he really wanted something more stable for his children. He wanted us to become doctors, lawyers, professors, something where we kind of hit plateaus that we could maintain for a long period of time, and acting is not like that. You know, on the flip side, acting affords you this amazing life of travel, of experiencing incredible things, because you're always going some other place to do your work and learning the local culture or the language, or getting to work in Italy or Spain or all over the world, really. I've traveled all over the world as an actor, and it's been amazing. But then you have economic uncertainty. This year, I have not worked since January because of COVID. And now things are finally opening up, and I have some jobs coming up this fall, but that was terrifying. Mm. And I know that there's a lot of industries that were affected, and many people have it much worse than we did, but there's no career stability or promise at all. There's no job stability unless you are on a hit TV show, but you have a contract that guarantees you a certain number of years, but you could be fired, or the TV show could be canceled even mid-season. So there's really no job security in my business whatsoever. And, you know, as I said, a hit TV show is the most stable of them, and even those are not guarantees. So it can be very scary economically. And when they reject you, they're not rejecting you on the basis of your resume or your qualifications. They're rejecting you on you. You're not good enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not tall enough, short enough, thin enough, fat enough, old enough, young enough. You are not what we're looking for. I remember when I was auditioning for the movie, it was the remake of Sabrina. The director said to my manager, and I do not know why she told me it because I think it was really foolhardy, but she said, they said you didn't have that certain something. You didn't have that spark. You don't have that special spark. Mm. And I was like, oh my God. Like, okay, I'm just basic. I'm just not a special person. You know what I mean? Like, just like,
wow.
You know, those kind of things. It's you. They are rejecting you. So yes, I completely understand why my father said not to do it. However, I love it. I think humbly, I do offer something unique. I do have an ability to do certain kinds of roles that is unique, that people have liked. Coming back to why you're talking to me today, the enduring love that people have for Romy and Michelle, I meant something in their lives. Like, something I did years ago is continuing to bear fruit as a positive for people all across the world. And that's special. I carry that with me and it makes me happy. So
I hope you do more comedies, because there are times when you see people and maybe you don't expect them to be funny, and being funny is really hard. You know, I'm friends with Sandler, and, you know, he does it for a living, but even then, you know, he'll have flops. Or Will Ferrell. And you pulled it off in The Mighty Aphrodite, and you pulled it off in this movie. It felt like it was you. And that's, I mean, that's a true test to who you are, not just acting, but to who you are. Because I really believe that in your core, you have to have that to be able to express that.
Yeah.
And you did it.
Thank you.
So I hope you get those opportunities.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I mean, as I said, that's why I love doing Modern Family and Hollywood so much, because I got to flex those muscles again, and I realized how happy I am when I'm doing it. So
where's the Academy Award?
I think it's on the piano. Yeah. There it is.
Has that been show and tell? Do the kids, are they allowed to take it to school or when they could go to school?
They have not. They've never asked. I think it's almost embarrassing for them to be like, oh, my mom's an actress. I don't know. They've never done that. No. They have done like slideshows, like when they, you know, I did a sort of a dramatic movie about human trafficking in Thailand, and they came back from Thailand with a slideshow of their trip. And so they have like ancillary references to my career that they'll bring into school. But I don't think they want to stand out for who their parent is, you know, which is, I think, smart.
What are we going to see you in coming up?
This month, I believe it's this month, on Quibi, I did a genre piece called The Expecting with Anna Sophia Robb. And it's kind of like a Alien meets Rosemary's Baby. And it's very thought-provoking, keep you on the edge of your seat, just in time for Halloween season. You know, I think it's something to distract from this elongated COVID season with just so much bummer stuff happening, that this will be a nice, fresh, scary, bingeable in short pieces, because it's Quibi, so it's those short bites and you have time for it in between anything else you're doing.
Thank you for your time, Mira. I appreciate it. I hope you never get tired of talking about this movie and that performance, because you're right. The impact that you had on people that you may not even know, it's such a wonderful experience or feel to have. And you've had that quite a few times in your career. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you so much.
Episodes of IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick are available exclusively on Amazon Music. Please make sure to follow us in the Amazon Music app to get every episode. IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick was created, hosted, and produced by me, Dan Patrick. It's also produced by Brendan Pike, edited by Nathan Moody, and executive produced by Paul Anderson, Nick Pinella, and Andrew Greenwood for Workhouse Media. IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick is a production of Dan Patrick Productions and IMDb in association with Workhouse Media.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.